Pour yourself a cold one.
They strike them, huh?
And listen to Russ Tucker and Philadelphia Eagles film junkie Fran Duffy break down the top college prospects on another tasty edition of The College Draft.
Yeah, it is Daddy Soda time, and man, oh man, there were some games last weekend with some top prospects that we need to talk about, some awesome games. We also are always all over the top quarterbacks, which got even more interesting with the 49ers trade for Jimmy Garoppolo and what that might mean at the top of the draft. As always, I am humbled to be in the presence of future NFL general manager Fran Duffy, the Eagles video scouting guru. You should check him out on Twitter at FDuffy3. His Twitter handle's awesome. The videos he posts are amazing. We love getting his insight. He's got the sickness. He's got the disease. He's got no life. We like that triple threat combination there of sickness, disease, and without having an actual life in terms of being social or having friends or anything. It's exactly Thank what you. We're looking for here. Let's get right into it. Fran, we always start with the quarterbacks. Got to get your thoughts on what you saw from the big three, and then we'll get into anybody else that jumped out to you on the TV copy over the weekend.
Yeah, it was a good week for Sam Darnold. You know, he goes 19 of 35. He goes just under 300 yards, three touchdowns against Arizona State, which the week before stunned Washington in a huge upset. So it was good to see USC and Sam Darnold get back on track with that win. They won by 31 points against the Sun Devils. So Darnold looked strong. I thought that Josh Allen, his numbers also were very, very good against New Mexico. He goes for 230 yards, four touchdowns, and a blowout win for the Cowboys out in Wyoming. Josh Rosen wasn't outstanding in terms of the numbers. 12 of 21, only 93 yards passing, one touchdown against Washington in that dynamic front seven. I know that the pressure was a little bit of an issue for UCLA this week against that Washington defensive front. So they ended up falling 44 to 23. They've got a tough game this week going on the road to Utah, and they're not going to be much better in terms of their front seven. So they're going to have a big test there, UCLA and Josh Rosen, for sure, going up against that Utah defensive front. They're going to have to get some things straightened out in terms of protection. But for Darnold and Allen, certainly the numbers were much better in terms of what we've seen over the course of the season.
What about anybody else that stood out to you, you know, on the TV copy over the weekend?
Well, I mean, if we're talking about quarterbacks, you got to talk about the performance from JT Barrett. And he certainly is not to the snuff of these other quarterbacks that we've talked about in terms of overall draft status. But, I mean, he completes 16 straight passes to end the game. He threw a couple of touchdowns on what looked like the same play design, attacking cover two for the Buckeyes. And they caught Penn State on that play a couple of different times. Then on the game-winning touchdown to Marcus Ball down in the red zone, they attacked cover three. They knew that Penn State would be running some kind of single high zone coverage, and they got him on it, and they were able to attack down the seam with Marcus Ball, JT Barrett, on the money throughout the course of that football game. I don't know if there was anybody that stood out to you, Ross, while you were watching that game, but you have to really like what you see from JT Barrett in the biggest game of the year for the Buckeyes.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple things that jumped out to me from the game. Number one, I was impressed with Ohio State's line play, both sides. I mean, Billy Price and those guys up front, they were knocking Penn State around. Certainly Saquon Barkley with the opening kickoff and that 30-yard touchdown was impressive. Mike Gesicki continued. I mean, I've said it before. I'll say it again. Penn State should just throw the ball to Saquon Barkley or Gesicki every play. I know Gesicki was being double-teamed, but those are their guys. Get them in space. Get them in the matchups. But really, I thought Ohio State dominated up front both sides of the ball. It's kind of amazing that Penn State really should have still won the game with that lead, and maybe just making one play here or there throughout the game, they would have been in better shape. But that was it for me. I only really got a chance to watch the first half. I got to go back and watch the second half because I was calling that Princeton-Cornell game. What about anybody else over the weekend, Fran, on the TV copy that stood out to you?
Sure. Yeah, I watched a good amount of that Oklahoma State-West Virginia game, and two guys on both sides. You know, the quarterback Mason Rudolph for Oklahoma State, He's been putting up big numbers all year. We've talked about him over the course of the last few months, and he only threw for 216, which, you know, a lot of people look, oh, that's not that great, especially when you look at his numbers over the course of the season. But it was a driving rainstorm. It wasn't good conditions there in this game, and he outdueled Will Grier, who was one of the hotter names at the quarterback position in college football for West Virginia, throws three touchdowns again in bad weather conditions. I thought that was a really good performance for Mason Rudolph. And then on the other side, West Virginia, man, they were flying around defensively in the start of this football game. And the senior safety, Kaiser White, he's a big kid. He's 6'2", 213 pounds. He's got really long arms, looks like a box player. He's got some range as well, really big hitter. Seven tackles. He had a forced fumble in the first quarter for the Mountaineers. So Kaiser White was one guy on defense for West Virginia who really stood out to me in this game.
Any other game? Anybody else around,
yeah,
around
sure.
college
That's
football?
Right. And Thursday night, Stanford, Oregon State. I watched a good amount of that game as well. And Harrison Phillips, man, he's an undersized interior defensive lineman. He's playing a lot of nose tackle for Stanford. And I don't think that's going to be necessarily his trademark moving forward in terms of playing at the NFL. But he is really, really active. He's got a quick first step, can win off the ball on the inside. Nine tackles, two behind the line of scrimmage on Thursday night against the Beavers. He's been really, really productive throughout the course of this season. He's a redshirt junior, I believe. So he's got the ability to either come out or stay in school. I'll be interested to see what Phillips decides to do. But he was really, really active when I watched them this past week against Oregon State.
What about guys that you actually got a chance to study a little bit?
Yeah, well, we've spent a lot of time talking about the quarterbacks. And so, I wanted to kind of take some time and look at Josh Allen in particular. And I looked at three games. I watched Iowa, I watched Gardner-Webb, and then I watched, what was the third, Oregon. So going back and just watching him, against Iowa week one, I thought he looked good in the first 60 plays. We saw everything that makes him such an intriguing prospect. He's doing things before the snap to read coverage and use what he learns there to help determine where to go with the football. You saw the arm strength allowing him to drive the football to any part of the field on a line. You saw the ability to escape, make plays on the move. You saw the accuracy on drive throws. He's got all the physical tools, and I thought he looked a little bit more natural climbing the pocket in that game with his eyes downfield than what I had seen from him earlier in his career as a redshirt sophomore. Made an outstanding throw against pressure where he climbs the pocket. He threw it to the backside post, like 40 yards downfield, right on a line, right at the field goal post. Should have been an easy touchdown. Ends up getting bobbled out of the end zone for an incomplete pass. So you saw what could have been a huge play in the stat sheet for Allen gets taken back, and now no one will remember that kind of throw. But I thought that was a really impressive play. Now, as the game progresses, things started to unravel a little bit. There were some bad decisions in that game. He took some bad sacks where he should have thrown the football away. There was a one play where he forced one throw to the sidelines on his first interception where he started pressing a little bit. He almost threw another pick on the next possession where he kind of rushed himself through his reads. He threw an interception on a screen pass, which I don't necessarily blame him for. But overall in that game, I thought he was solid to above average, considering it was his first game of the year with all the turnover on the road at Iowa. All those factors into consideration, I thought Allen had a solid performance against the Hawkeyes. And then you go to the next week to Gardner-Webb, a far lesser opponent in terms of overall skill level, saw more of the same. You saw those outstanding throws where he climbs the pocket and he puts the ball on the money to a wide receiver on the run for a touchdown. Overall, I thought he looked really in rhythm in that game. He made throws off of play action on the run. He's getting a little bit better again and getting through those progressions. But then you go and watch the Oregon game, and that was the worst game that I watched of the three. He was inaccurate, a little bit erratic throughout the course of that football game, was not on the same page often with his wide receivers, so that you wonder, all right, is that more on him or is it more on the receivers? Either way, they just were not in sync with each other. Sometimes he got stuck on progressions a little bit too long. Others, he moved off too quickly. So you can kind of see he was starting to press. And I watched the Boise State game as well, which was from 2 weeks ago. And you could see that frustration was starting to mount for him as that game went on. He was starting to press a little bit, dealing with pressure in front of him, dealing with some of the inconsistencies that they're having in terms of their timing and rhythm on offense. So it's been a struggle for him. For overall, I think that when you're watching Josh Allen, you're going to see those physical traits. Overall, though, if he goes to the combine, Ross, and you know how important this stuff is, if he goes to the combine and he goes on these private visits, if he impresses in the interview room and impresses at the board and impresses in film study with coaches, he's going to go in the top 10. Without question, he's going to go high if he impresses, because he's got all the physical traits there. He shows flashes of being able to do everything that you need a quarterback to do. There have been bouts of inaccuracy, but I don't think that it's to the point where I think it's an overall detriment to his game. I'm still excited to continue watching more of Josh Allen, especially as the season has gone on. But from what I watched early on, I still see the same player that I saw a year ago, and a guy that should be going in the first round of this draft. If we've seen some of these other quarterbacks that we've seen go high in recent years, like a Paxton Lynch, Josh Allen's a better prospect than Paxton Lynch was coming out of Memphis. There's no question in my mind about it. So I look at Josh Allen, and he should be a first-round pick when it's all said and done. I also had a chance to watch Baker Mayfield, and I watched three games of him against Ohio State, Baylor, and then the loss to Iowa State. And overall with Mayfield, he's got a lot working against him because he's extremely undersized. He lacks elite physical tools, so he doesn't have top-end arm talent that you're going to expect from a guy that's going to be a little bit bigger. And since he's a little bit undersized, you want him to make up for it in other ways. And I don't think that his physical tools are top-end elite. Comes from an offense that does not project well to the NFL. We've talked about that in the past, projecting those air raid quarterbacks so that the system does not bode well. He plays a style overall that does not project well to the NFL. And he's had issues as well with maturity off the football field. So there's a lot going against Baker Mayfield. That being said, I do think he's got the ability to stick in the NFL as a backup quarterback. He's got really good touch to every level of the field. He's got the ability to hit receivers in stride on the deep ball because of his ability to throw with touch. He's got the ability, obviously, to escape and make plays outside the pocket, which if you watch quarterbacks around the league these days, that's an important trait to have in today's NFL. I think his arm is just about good enough. I don't think he can drive the ball consistently to every level of field, but I don't think that it's going to be something that's going to keep him from being an NFL quarterback. To me, the issue that he's going to have is just from the mental aspect of the game, getting through progressions, seeing things when it's not really well defined for him when he's in the pocket and staying patient and playing. I just don't see a guy that's able to do that at a consistent level right now. And that's going to be my issue for him. I think he's an NFL player. He's got a lot working against him. I just don't see an NFL starter.
What anybody else that you got a chance to study since last week?
Yeah, so last week, the Senior Bowl released a mid-season all-senior team, and so that's always interesting, just kind of seeing, because they talk with everybody in terms of the NFL scouts and everybody that's on the road, and so you get some names that might be getting some buzz, and there were two corners that were named to that all-senior team. One was Levi Wallace from Alabama, who's been a former walk-on, who's been starting every game there for them, but then also was the corner Michael Joseph from Dubuque. And I'm like, well, I got to watch this kid. I mean, he's up there with, you see Alabama, you see LSU, you see Florida, and you see Dubuque. All right, well, I'm going to watch him. He's 6'1", 181 pounds. I watched him against Pacific and against Buena Vista. All right, so that's what I'm spending my time doing, watching Dubuque and Buena Vista.
This sickness, disease, no life. If you're watching Michael Joseph against Buena Vista and Pacific, sorry, Fran, you have no life. But that works for us. Your lifestyle is conducive to this podcast.
I'm taking one for the team for everybody involved, so I can translate this information to you. But I'll tell you what, you watch Michael Joseph, man. I mean, he's got size, he's got speed, and he's got ball skills. He's a toolsy kid. He was the best player on the field there, watching in those games at the D3 level, which you want to see. Look, you're going to knock guys coming from small school and come from a lower level of competition. But you want them to be able to stand out watching the film. Like, one of the things I like to do is I'll turn on these small school tapes, and without knowing the kid's number, I just want to see if he stands out. Like, I'll turn on two or three plays without even knowing what number he is and just seeing if he flashes. And Michael Joseph is that kind of guy because of how long he is, because of how explosive he is. He just moves differently than everyone else at that level of competition. He can make plays in man. He made plays in zone. The first interception I saw him make against Pacific, he was a cover three corner, okay, on the backside against the post route. So they were running a deep post from the opposite side of the field, and he had a crossing route on his side. He passed off the crosser, had his eyes on the quarterback, and you saw him just track that football down against a route from the other side of the field and finish in the air for an interception. It was a really, really impressive play. He's not a great run defender right now, and overall, His technique from snap to finish is just very raw and very unrefined. If he's a good kid and has the work ethic and the ability to take coaching, I could see him going high. Like, if he, I mentioned that earlier with Josh Allen. If he impresses in interviews and coaches feel really comfortable with him improving, he's going to go high in this draft because he's got all the physical tools to be a starter on the outside. But without me knowing anything about him right now, I'm looking at him as a developmental backup very early on. But he's very, very intriguing. I really hope that he gets a chance to go to the Senior Bowl and kind of prove what he's got against top competition.
Speaking of top competition, if you think that you can handle yourself against top competition and you think that you got a shot to make some good wagers, there's only one place to do it, and that's BetDSI.com. I'll tell you why. They're A-plus rated on sportsbook review sites. They've been in business over 20 years. They have an easy-to-use mobile playing interface. Play, win, get paid. Best of all, if you use our special promo code, Fran's promo code, college25, you get a $25 free wager just for registering. Then if you decide to deposit, you will get a 200% bonus match on your money. Look, why not, right? I mean, go place a wager on something using the code college25 on a college game, maybe the LSU-Alabama game we're about to talk about, and get a 200% extra bonus when you deposit. That's college25 at betdsi.com. Let's go head-to-head.
Head-to-head.
I mentioned it, Fran. There's always a lot of talent when LSU and Alabama kick it off. It's an 8 p.m. game Saturday night on CBS. Who are the guys we need to know about this year?
Well, when you watch LSU, you know, on offense, it's going to start with Darius Geis, who really got on track 2 weeks ago against Ole Miss. He had his biggest game of the year coming back from that leg injury, 22 carries, 276 yards, 12 and a half yards per carry, reached the end zone once. And you're hoping that Geis is able to build off of that. Now, I know he missed some practice time between now and then, so you hope that he is healthy for this football game. I would imagine that he is, but he's going to be going up against an Alabama front seven that is loaded with talent, as it almost always is. I'm not sure if Deshaun Hand, the defensive lineman for Alabama, is going to be back in this game, but De'Ron Payne, the junior nose tackle, is extremely talented. He's physical. He's got a high motor. He's got the ability to make plays sideline to sideline. And then at the linebacker level, you've got the seniors, Sean Dion Hamilton, who had three tackles 2 weeks ago against Tennessee, Rashawn Evans, who was working back from an injury of his own. He had six tackles and a sack against the Volunteers. He's a big kid, 6'3", 234, who's played a couple different linebacker positions for the Crimson Tide throughout the course of his career. He can rush off the edge and play off the ball. I kind of think he's more of an off-the-ball Sam linebacker at the next level when it's all said and done, but some very talented players in that front seven for Alabama. So it's going to be a huge test for Darius Geis and that LSU offensive line. They've got some young players up front there. It's an underclassman group for the most part, outside of the right side of the line. I think it's going to be a really big test for that group. And then on the outside, DJ Chark, the wide receiver for LSU, is the guy to watch. He was kept off the scoreboard 2 weeks ago against Ole Miss, but the week before against Auburn, five catches, 150 yards. He's a big physical kid who's got the ability to get down the football field. So Levi Wallace, who I mentioned earlier, the senior corner on the left side for Alabama. Anthony Averett is a corner on the right side. Two physical kids that like to mix it up in press coverage. They've got the ability to run deep. That's going to be a big matchup for them. Obviously, we know about Minka Fitzpatrick, who is my number one defensive back as we sit here today in this draft class, if he were to declare. And then Ronnie Harrison is a big-time safety as well. So for DJ Chark and the rest of that LSU receiving corps, and for quarterback Danny Etling, it's going to be a huge matchup in this game.
Yeah, there should be a bunch of good games. What about when Alabama has the ball? I feel like we haven't heard that much about Arden Key.
No, we really haven't. Now, the last couple weeks, he's turned it up a little bit. Three sacks in the last two games, two sacks last week against Ole Miss, and then he had a sack against Auburn the week before. So Arden Key is starting to turn it up. You hope that he is really kind of reaching his stride, coming back from the injury that he was dealing with earlier in the year. He's going to be matched up for the most part against Jonah Williams, who's the true sophomore left tackle, who's really, really talented, very, very refined for a young offensive lineman. So that's going to be the big one-on-one matchup to watch. But I'll tell you what, man, you watch this Alabama O-line across the board on the inside, Ross Pierschbacher at left guard, Bradley Bozeman at center, right guard Lester Cotton going up against this LSU defensive front. You know, they play that 3-4 scheme. You've got the senior Christian Lacouture, the nose tackle Greg Gilmore, keep an eye in the trenches. But at the skill spots, you know I love Damian Harris. I've been talking about him since the end of last season, the senior runner for Alabama. 13 carries, 72 yards and a touchdown 2 weeks ago against Tennessee. I love his vision, his decisiveness. He is a workhorse type of back, and he's been a starter there for the last 2 years. Bo Scarborough has been more of a short yardage guy for Alabama for the majority of this year. He had 2 touchdowns 2 weeks ago against Tennessee, but only 18 yards rushing. Donnie Alexander is the senior inside linebacker for LSU. Did not play against Tennessee or against Ole Miss a couple weeks ago. He was listed questionable going into the game and didn't play. You really hope, if you're an LSU fan, that he's able to come back. I believe he's got 33 tackles on the year so far for LSU. So that's going to be a big thing for them, getting Harris back into the lineup. They're getting Alexander back in the lineup to match up against Harris and Scarborough. And then out in the perimeter, Calvin Ridley is a guy that I love. At the wide receiver spot for Alabama. Watch him. Watch Robert Foster, the senior. They've got some young talent as well, as they always do for Alabama. So keep an eye at the wide receiver spot for Ridley and the company there for the Crimson Tide. Going up against some talented LSU corners. You know, Dante Jackson, Andres Williams is a redshirt freshman. Kevin Tolliver is a really long, athletic junior who's got a lot of playing time already over the course of his career for the Tigers. So it's going to be a lot of really fun matchups. This is my favorite game to watch throughout the college football season every single year because of all the talent on the field for both teams. So really, really excited for Saturday at 8 p.m.
Should be awesome. I love it every time as well. I'm glad they're doing it in a night game. What about other matchups around the country that you'll be looking at?
Dude, this is a great weekend of college football. There's like 10, 11, 12 games that are going to be really fun to watch. So you've got Bedlam with Oklahoma State and Oklahoma. Keep an eye on James Washington from Oklahoma State. He scored 2 touchdowns in that game I watched against West Virginia this past week against Oklahoma corner Jordan Thomas. They're going to be matched up a few times in this game. He had 4 tackles last week against Texas Tech, had an interception 2 weeks ago against Kansas State. I'm not sure that Jordan Thomas is a starting receiver in the NFL or starting corner in the NFL, but this will be a big test for him against a very physical James Washington who likes to attack down the football field and win in contested situations. So that's going to be a really fun matchup to watch there in that rivalry game. Miami's taking on Virginia Tech, which is going to be one of these night games, 2 ranked teams. I'm really excited to watch that. Miami wide receiver Amon Richards, who is going to be – he's an underclassman. He's not eligible for the draft yet, but the senior slot guy, Braxton Berrios, had a big game last week, 7 for 78 and a score against North Carolina. Keep an eye on those two receivers against this Virginia Tech secondary. Greg Stroman at corner is a guy that I really like. He's a senior. I don't think he's got great athletic upside, but a really smart, instinctive, tough kid at the corner spot. Adonis Alexander had a pass breakup last week against Duke. He's back from his early season suspension. Really talented, probably the highest upside of all these Virginia Tech corners. He's a big kid who can run. And then Brandon Faison, 6'2", 197. Big, long, tall corner built in the way that a lot of NFL teams want their corners to look these days. You look at Georgia going up against South Carolina, so you got those two runners. Nick Chubb, who I'm a big, big fan of, 77 yards and a touchdown last week against Florida. Sony Michel, huge day against the Gators, 137 yards, 2 touchdowns against Florida last week in the Tea Party. Going up against South Carolina and that linebacker, Sky Moore. I dove deep into Sky Moore in last week's episode, in case you didn't catch that. I'm a big fan of Sky Moore as well, so that's a matchup to watch there. Oregon is taking on Washington, so you got Royce Freeman, the senior runner. Hasn't scored in over a month, hoping to reach the end zone now. He's been effective in terms of yardage, just hasn't been able to reach the end zone, going up against that tough Washington front seven that I mentioned earlier. Keep an eye on the linebackers, Keyshawn Bereria and Azeem Victor there for the Huskies. Another running back matchup, Akram Wadley for Iowa, taking on Ohio State, and that athletic linebacker, Jerome Baker. He had a lot to do with the Buckeyes keeping Saquon Barkley limited throughout the course of that football game on Saturday. So keep an eye on the junior, Jerome Baker, there for Ohio State. You've got Notre Dame, another big win for them last week against NC State. They're taking on Wake this week. Watch the pass rusher there for Wake Forest, Duke Ejiofor, 6'3", 267. He had 5 tackles on the sack last week in their upset win over Louisville. This kid knows how to rush the passer. He's not a great athlete, but he uses his hands to win in a lot of different ways. Going up against Mike McGlinchey and Quentin Nelson and that Notre Dame offensive line, that's going to be a fun matchup. I mentioned Notre Dame earlier. They take on Clemson. So you got that Clemson O-line against NC State's D-line. It's, dude, there's matchups all up and down college football this week. It's going to be a really, really fun week to watch this week in terms of all the individual matchups with NFL draft implications this Saturday.
Yeah, it feels like we're getting to that part of the year. You know, it feels like we're getting to that part of the year where there's a lot of better matchups on a week-in, week-out basis, which is awesome, which is the way it should be. Anything else, Fran, that stands out to you that, you know, either a matchup this weekend or guys that you've noticed recently?
Oof, man, I mean, I guess if you want to, there's a small school kid to keep an eye on. There's, you know, with all these great games, everyone's going to kind of forget that Mississippi State is taking on UMass, the independent team formerly of the MAC. And, you know, Deshaun Downey, the pass rusher for UMass, has gotten a little bit of buzz. He's 6'4". He's pretty light at 220, but he's athletic. He can win off the ball. And going up against Mississippi State, they've got that left tackle, Martinez Rankin, a senior, who a lot of people were really high on. So keep an eye on that little matchup. They've got the tight end, Adam Brenneman, UMass as well. So this will be one of the first games that NFL scouts use to go back and watch Brenneman going up against an SEC foe. So keep an eye on that game as well.
You can also always catch Fran on his Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast every week, talking about the game of football from the All-22. This week he starts or continues his Saturday scouting article detailing even more matchups to watch in Week 10. Next week we'll be back for week number 11 in college football. A lot more matchups to discuss, and we'll give you a recap of not only the quarterbacks, but what we saw from the studs in the LSU-Alabama game. Check out Fran on Twitter, at FDuffy3. I am, of course, at Ross Tucker NFL, and the podcast is at RTF Podcast. If you like this, I'm sure you'll love the Fantasy Feast, Even Money, and the Ross Tucker Football Podcast as well. We got stuff for fantasy, for gambling, for NFL, even the business of the NFL with Andrew Brandt and the Business of Sports. Other than that, the keg is kicked. We're all tapped out.
Thanks for enjoying your Frosty One while listening to the College Draft. Chugga, 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 chugga. Make sure you're also subscribing to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Fantasy Feast, and Even Money Podcasts, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.
Hey, it's Jay Moore, and it is time, finally, for America's Lakers Podcast. That's right, I'm going to be hosting America's Lakers Podcast. My man Aaron Larsoul, an analytical genius, he's going to bring to the table what I can't every Wednesday. America's Lakers Podcast exclusively at podcastone.com, the podcastone.com app, which I highly recommend. You can rate and review this podcast on all Apple products. And guess what we're not going to do? We're not going to bathe in the gossip and the gratuitous negativity that's been swallowing Los Angeles whole lately. Who did what? Who snitched? Who said what? How about truth? How about facts? How about statistics? How about rotations? What's Luke Walton thinking? Who's underperforming? Who's overachieving? Who's rewarded? Who's coming? Who's going? And what are we going to do with all that delightful, delicious cap space? America's Lakers Podcast with me, Jay Moore, and my man, my brother, Aaron Larsoul, every Wednesday, podcastone.com.